your host, Joel Clavish, alongside Danielle Fairman.
Hello.
Broadcasting at 540 AM WAUK 101 FM, The Shaw, and throughout the great state of Wisconsin on 13 stations.
Look at us grow.
On your civic media station. Man, I'm vibrating. I'm so excited. I'm very excited, Danielle. It is the greatest time to be in the state of Wisconsin right now. We've got deer season, which starts Saturday. The gun deer season.
The gun deer.
The rut is thoroughly underway. Waterfowl is open.
Mm-hmm.
I've got people seeing speckle bellies. The Canada goose migration is going on. Ducks are just finally starting to get here because we got some colder weather up in Canada finally. And this is one of the most exciting weeks that I think I have ever had. You know why? Do you know why, Danielle?
Well, what? Why? Because you get another week with me, actually.
Well, that's for sure. I mean, there's no doubt about that. But I'm really excited. Chad Belding, host of The Fowl Life, is in studio with us today. He and his crew, Anna V from Anna V Outdoors, is here. And his entire crew is here in Wisconsin, featuring the state of Wisconsin. We're shooting television shows. We're
That's
cooking
awesome.
Wild game from field to table. We're touring Harley-Davidson cheese factories. I mean, we're going to interview.
You're doing the whole Wisconsin thing.
We are doing everything Wisconsin and showcasing how fantastic this state is. Chad, welcome to Wisconsin, but
hello.
I'd like to say welcome to Wisconsin for your first time, but it is not your first time. You love this state. What keeps bringing you back here?
You.
Oh,
that's precious.
He was pointing at me.
I have no doubt about that.
The outdoors is awesome here. You know, I'm a huge walleye fan, like fish fries. I'm a huge baseball fan. I love Miller Park. I don't know what they call it now, but.
American still
family.
Calls
it's still
it Miller
Park. It will always be Miller Park.
Yeah.
I love Bob Uecker. I love Brewers baseball. Not really a Packers fan, not really a football fan at all, or a Bucks fan, NBA, but there's just something about the state. It's beautiful. It's unassuming, because when you think Wisconsin, it always comes up Lambeau Field, maybe breweries because there's a lot of beer in the state, but you very rarely hear about how special the landscape is, the farmers, the small town communities, until you actually take the time to visit it and see for yourself in person. It's just got a really cool culture about it that I don't think that a lot of people know about. And it's kind of the same way I feel about upstate New York. You think Manhattan, the boroughs, NYC, and you
sounds horrible in New York. My first thought is crowded, crowded, crowded.
Yeah, it's just like this. So when you get to upstate New York, it's gorgeous, right? But Wisconsin's cool because it's got everything an outdoorsman would want, from big game. You can chase fish in a lot of different manners, whether it's bass, walleye, mm-hmm. perch, ice fishing in the wintertime. The turkey hunting is insane here.
It's insane.
The waterfowl hunting. So I like a lot. I just like the state. I like the people. I like the gravel parking lots at a little pub in a little in a little town for a fish fry on a Friday night. So there's a lot that brings me back. But yeah, as a state, it's a pretty special place.
I think a lot of people don't even realize that if you synonymous with good food and good eating in Wisconsin is the corner pub, is the bar.
Oh yeah, five-star dive bar.
You go to a ton of different places in the country, and you go to a bar, you're not going to eat the range of cuisine and the range of cultural cuisine mm-hmm. in the state of Wisconsin that you're going to find when you're at a corner bar. It's crazy.
And I always find it fascinating when I go to another state and there's no Friday fish fry. Like, to me, that's just a normal thing. I always grew up with Friday fish fries.
Yeah.
And now it's like when you go to Colorado or North Dakota or anywhere, oh, you can have a fish fry on a Tuesday? No. Fish fries are not on Tuesdays. Thank you very much.
Yeah, no, they're Fridays. But, you know, Wisconsin right now is the middle of the hunting season. Mm-hmm. You guys have come here because we're hunting waterfowl here, and we're under a little bit of a weird scenario. It's the middle of November, and it's 60 degrees,
it's
65 degrees.
I hate
out.
It so much. I hate it.
I think non-hunters love it because it's warm, but it's tough. These are tough conditions, aren't they, Chad, to hunt waterfowl?
Yeah, I think, I mean, there's a lot of things that go into getting the right scenario to be consistently successful and duck and goose hunting, and I think weather is a huge part of it. The climate, the moon phase, the temperature has a lot to do with it. And you could have a lot of birds in the area, and y'all do. I mean, you drive around from Milwaukee all the way to Madison around, you see a lot of Canada geese up in grass fields, parking lots, gravel. They're literally in every, you know, there. I saw guys golfing in shorts yesterday. So, yeah. I mean, we drove by a golf course and there's geese eating on the grass and there was guys golfing in shorts and it's the middle of November when there should be, you guys have had a little snow so far, but there should be snow right now and there should be lows in the 20s and highs in the 30s right now. And you're getting, it was 62 degrees today.
Yeah, I wore a t-shirt at work today. Did not like that. Yeah.
So I think to get that, what you want in waterfowl, you have to put stress on the birds. They have to be stressed out. And the number one thing that happens when weather comes and the barometric pressure drops is that they feel that stress. They get nervous. They get really stressed. And the first thing they have to do is get the food. So they don't waste a lot of time. They're not lackadaisical. They're more focused on doing what it takes to survive. You know, they'll stay on the roost longer. They'll conserve or reserve their body heat. And then they'll come out and they'll be in a hurry to get to the ground. And obviously wind helps with that, that sense of urgency to get to the ground. But when you don't have the conditions, you know, then waterfowls, they're leery. They're really, really hard to pattern, and they're almost unpatternable with the way the weather is right now. And thank God we have Jack and he's sitting here and we have a loaf hunt tomorrow because geese will get dumb over water. You know, even in these conditions, when they're comfortable in a day loaf and you're not hunting the roost, I don't want anybody to get that idea. It's not big water roost. It's a midday loaf. You will see a goose act right over in that condition, even if it is going to get upwards of 50 degrees tomorrow, which is better than 62, but it's still too warm.
Yeah. I was going to ask you about that. You get a chance to hunt this entire country. So you've hunted those molt migrators, right? Those are birds that are born in Canada and they're flying south. They've never seen a spread. A lot of them have never even seen a spread. They've never seen decoys. Is it a lot easier to fake them out than birds that are either local or are stationed or stagnant, sitting somewhere because the weather pattern hasn't really pushed them south? I mean, they're calendar birds to an extent. They're coming through Wisconsin. You know, we got Lake Michigan on one side, the Mississippi River on the other, and more inland lakes per capita than any other state. So you've got birds that are kind of staging here. When you hunt the molt migrators, is it easier to fool them? Because at the end of the day, you're fooling Mother Nature. Is it easier to fool those that have never seen a spread versus those we're hunting here? Is it a different game?
Molt migrators are 2 years old. So they've seen spreads. They've been up and down the flyway already once, right? Some of them are even born in that area. And then they'll go back to Ontario before they come back to that part. If you're specifically talking about New York, where it's really popular to hunt the molt migration. They're still smart. But the thing about it is that if you get on a migration day, if they sit there for 2 days, they're still considered migrators. But a real migrator day is when you're killing them as they come from Canada into that part of New York, and they come to the call. So calling is key when it comes to hunting molt migrators like that. They're hunting up the sound. Visual, it's a big deal. Hides are a little bit easier to get away from because usually they do it on the first pass if the conditions are right. But you can read, the biggest thing is the moon phase. You can read the moon phase and know when they're going to move. You'll see birds start to kind of filter in ahead of the moon. But then when the moon goes to full, you know that you're going to have a day to where you're going to hear them all night. And then it's going to continue to noon the next day. And those are the days that somebody like Nick McNamara, you know, strives to have and just prays for to the duck and goose gods. Because you can pattern them like tomorrow's the day. He'll literally look at you and go, it'll be Sunday. And that's all based on moon phase, maybe a wind, but mainly the moon. And that, in September, you're getting into the 70s every day in upstate New York, sometimes the 80s. It's based on the moon phase. Last year, the moon phase was on September 18th. We crushed them the entire time we were there, several hundred bird days. This year, the moon phase was on October 2nd, October 3rd, after the season ended. So you get that conditions. You can't do anything about, you know, the stars don't align. You're not going, you can't do anything about it. So yeah, I mean, you still have to hide. You still have to have a good decoy spread, but I think proficiency and vocalization is key. And it's my favorite part about waterfowl hunting anyway, is the calling aspect.
How do you call, I mean, are you a guy who's calling them right till they're in the pocket in the hole? Do you call the molt or the migrators, I should say, do you call those differently than you're calling local geese or geese that are staging?
For sure, yeah. You're going to holler at them until their toenails are in the dirt when they're migrating. Same with breaking ducks. If you're hunting migrating ducks or if you're hunting flooded timber ducks, they don't, there's not a lot of visual, you know, aspects of the hunt, right? They're flying over those trees in Arkansas and they come to a call. And that's why most of the top duck callers in this country are born and raised in Arkansas, because it's an audio state. What's the correct verb for that? Or the correct audiolistic? Oh, that's the word I'm looking for. You're a word guy, Joel.
You are a word guy.
An audiolistic?
I don't know. Maybe
Luke, is that a word?
Audiolistic.
Audio. It's not just an audio state, but there's a word that they're hunting up the call. And when you're calling it migrators, you are not a wall of sound. You really, you want to stay goosey, but you're going to be very aggressive with them from the time you get on them to the time they finish.
See, I always thought this is probably why I don't kill many geese, but I always thought you call until you pretty much see them. And then once they're getting close, you can actually see them stop calling so they can just pinpoint you right away. That's always what I've done. That's probably also why I haven't killed many geese. No,
they're going to come to the call and they're going to come to a flag depending on what your height is. But you want to sound like geese, and geese and ducks are very audio driven animals, right? If you go to a live refuge, they never shut up. It's not like you go there at 3 a.m. and it's quiet like it is in your house, you know, and people are sleeping.
No, it's loud.
It's loud.
Mm-hmm.
You hear the sandhill cranes going, the geese are going. I mean, sandhill cranes will make noise all night long and you'll hear the geese going. And I think that's where some of the nuances of actually being a decent caller make the difference when you're out there too. Now, look, I'm not the most fantastic caller, but if you're a halfway decent caller, you're going to kill geese. But I think the nuances of those difficult geese, that's where practicing and becoming a decent caller makes the difference. We're getting ready for a break already. When we come back, though, I want to talk to you about what you said about Wisconsin being, you know, kind of an unknown state. You know, we're working with the Department of Tourism Travel Wisconsin now on helping it to become not kind of an unknown state. It really is kind of a hidden gem. And one of the things that I love about when you come into town, when the crew comes into town, is you guys are not just coming here to go on a hunting trip. You guys are coming here to experience the people of the state of Wisconsin, the food of the state of Wisconsin, the outdoor recreation from different things. There's hiking, there's fishing, there's boating, there's hunting. Anybody who loves anything about the outdoors can experience it here in Wisconsin. I don't think a lot of people know that. We'll be right back. Then we're going to talk to Anna V of Anna V Outdoors. We had a heck of a day today out at Milford Hills hunting pheasants, beating feet in the pheasant fields, which was awesome, too. We'll be right back on Raised in Wisco. I'm your host, Joel Clayfish, alongside Danielle Fair. Welcome back to Raisin Wisco on 540 AM WAUK 101 FM, the Sean throughout the great state of Wisconsin on all your civic media stations. I'm so jacked because, you know, Mike, Kirk, the owner of the station here, he told us we're really growing outstate. Now, that's exciting because, of course, outstate, you know, you do have a higher population of hunters and fishermen than in some of the bigger cities. But a goal of this show is to get folks who live in cities in higher populated areas who may not know about the outdoors to understand that it is never too late to start. It's never too late to get involved. And
well, I feel like we're bringing Anastasia out into this world of ours. Remember, she had
Anastasia,
venison.
Is that true?
And she went camping and she went,
feel I've been perhaps dragged into worlds of sorts recently.
She did. And she thought of us.
She ate venison and thought about us while she did it. And, you know, I mean, to me, the preparation of food, the eating of the food and making people happy when they eat. You know, my Italian mom, Mary, is sitting in the lobby. She comes almost every week.
She does. We love
and
mom.
Watches the show and listens to the show. And I have to say, everyone says, did you learn to cook from her? And I say, I think I absorbed it through osmosis, just watching her my whole life and watching her make homemade meals every day of our life. Now,
you said you were going to bring some spaghetti sauce.
I am going to bring some spaghetti sauce. She's going to make some. I promise you it's going to happen at this point.
I was also promised a goose pot pie.
Oh, 2 weeks. Look at us.
That is on its way. I promise. I delivered like 7 to farmers, went back, and my daughter had friends over, and they ate it at midnight. So I did the one that was in the freezer,
dang,
ready to come here, got eaten. Chad Belding, national host of the Foul Life show that I have the honor and privilege to work on. Absolutely love it. Doing the Foul Life Midwest and the Foul Life Podcast Midwest is in town. The Foul Life crew is here in Wisconsin. We're hunting. We're experiencing, you know, some of the greatest things the state has to offer. Yesterday, we went to a cheese curd factory.
A cheese curd factory?
Which was like, I've eaten cheese curds my whole life. I absolutely love them. My favorite one is a specific cheese curd, a Munster cheese curd.
Everybody loves
from
Munster.
Kramer's Dairy. And we literally got to go to Silver and Lewis Cheese Factory, and Chad Belding and Anna V helped make the cheese curds.
What?
Got in there.
That's
Chad
a thing. You guys get to do
a
that?
Beard mask.
Aww.
What did you think of that, Chad?
Were there
that
pictures?
Was so awesome.
Need to show pictures.
Yeah, they were. it's a cool process. It's pretty simple, though. I mean,
yeah.
I don't think we were there for the tough, you know, the hard part of the actual cutting of the curd when it comes out of the mold, but
squeakiness.
Yeah, that family was cool, man. Josh and Claire. Was it Claire?
Carla.
Carla, yeah, they were just great.
Yeah, we went there. Chad had a little beard mask on because you have to cover your hair while you're in there. And then he was literally cutting the cheese. I gave
you,
it a shot cutting the cheese. Do you know that
salt and pepper.
They go through 85,000 pounds of milk a day?
A day?
A day.
I just feel like that would smell so bad.
Oh, it smelled awesome.
Did
actually.
It?
Yeah, it smelled like cheese.
I don't know why I think it would smell bad, but I feel like it would just smell bad.
No, it was fantastic.
Vision this. You pound down a backstrap and fill it with cheese curds and wrap it in bacon.
Yeah, we have.
I want that.
That sounds amazing. Last night, we made shredded wild goose sandwiches.
Yeah.
We made a homemade barbecue sauce with no carbs in it. And we sauteed the cheese curds and put them on top. And
you
we
sauteed the cheese curds?
Yes. We put it on top of a bed of was artichoke heart rice. Mm-hmm. So there was like no carbs in it. And it turned out fantastic. It was really good. And when I went into the break, I was talking about the fact that the Foul Life, when they come here, what I really love about it is they absorb everything that Wisconsin has to offer. They're not coming here just boots on the ground hunting. They're experiencing the culinary, joy of it, the small town pub, and the people of Wisconsin. This state really has things to offer that you literally travel the United States, and there's amazing places throughout the United States. But when you get to Wisconsin, the things to do from a conservation standpoint in the outdoors of the state, you have literally everything here, and it's all going on at once. And Chad, is that one of the reasons that you keep returning? Because I love it when you guys come, and I think to myself, you get to travel the world and hunt. You get to travel the United States and hunt anywhere you want, and yet you keep finding your way back to Wisconsin.
Yeah, I think that, you know, like I said before, the people are what brings me back. But I think networking is a big part of life. And I think that if you really want to get the most out of life or the most out of an experience, you keep every door open. Like you want to be a good sponge. You want to learn as much as you can. You can always get in a position to where you have a soapbox and you can talk a lot, or sometimes you can step off of it and listen and absorb information and try to become ingrained in that culture. And I think that through our brands, whether it's the Foul Life or Jargon, and, you know, those are both well represented at the Wisconsin Waterfowl Expo and Oshkosh every year. And then you bring in our culinary company, The Provider, which you open some doors there through dealers here, big time meetings with the Roundy's Corporation from Pick and Save and Metro Mark, which is a subsidiary company to the Kroger Corporation, which is, you know, the potential for opportunity is always there. And I think that Wisconsin has all of that, you know, and then on top of it, they have just an unbelievable aptitude of outdoor experiences.
Yeah.
And I think that when you come from a place like I do, and we do have a lot of experiences where, you know, in Nevada, California, every state has a special place to be. And it's a two-edged, so, you know, it's a two-edged sword of like, do you want people to know about this? You know, travel Wisconsin has brought us on to create an awareness or create curiosity in our listeners and our end consumers and our customers, whoever it might be, of like, what does that state have to offer? So if you put that all into a positive realm, it looks really good on paper, right?
Yeah.
But I've also almost been in fistfights with people in Arkansas for shedding light on how great it is, right? So you have to be careful of, like, do you want this resource to welcome everybody in America or Canada or New Zealand or whoever's going to take an opportunity to fly into Milwaukee or Green Bay or Madison and experience the outdoors here? Do you really want that as a local? Because sometimes locals get that chip on their shoulder, like, this is our mm-hmm. our land.
Yes,
you know, do. And I think that there's some variable in there that, you know, you gotta respect that. But we're also, you know, America's America. And as long as you're legal and you're ethical and you're respectful of the area and you take pride in it and you leave it better mm-hmm. when you leave than when you found it, then I think that it's okay. And I think that people really get that attitude. It's almost like road rage, right? Like, every road is mine when I'm on it. Right. That's so stupid.
Or those deer are mine.
I would say that's so scary with this season coming up, the 9-day gun season, that everybody is going to be in every 20 feet from you. And the big old orange.
600,000 people. It's going to be insane. The orange army comes out every day on the opening of gun deer season. That is a larger mass of people than the vast majority of medium-sized countries' entire armies, if you want to think of it that way. Holy cow.
I was not thinking
booking.
It that way.
Yeah, the show is booking. Anna V from Anna V Outdoors. We're going to come back from the break, and I want to talk to you, Anna V, about how the relationships you make in the state of Wisconsin are lifelong and how they end up translating into what makes Wisconsin great and what makes people come back. You know, we're in an era right now where we're losing hunters. So it's part of our obligation to understand the ways in which we can start having people get off of their 3x7-inch screens and back into the outdoors. We're going to talk with Anna V of Anna V Outdoors when we come back. We'll be right back on Raised in Wisco after this break. On 540 AM, WAUK 101 FM, the Shaw, and throughout the great state of Wisconsin on your civic media station Saturdays at 11 AM. And that is in thanks to Anastasia, our producer. She makes us sound somewhat more intelligent.
It's still her birthday month, isn't it?
It is her birthday month. Happy Woo! Birthday month.
Thank
and
you.
Hello to our five loyal listeners in Oconomowoc. I want to say, what's up?
Hello.
To the Kennedy clan. I know they're listening because they called on the way here.
Did they?
Yes.
Oh.
Do you know how happy I am right now in this element, Daniel?
Can you feel it
radiating
I can
off
feel
of
it.
Me? The foul
good
life.
Vibrations.
I get to be, and I'm not going to lie about it, I'm pretty jazzed. I get to be the Midwest host of The Foul Life and the Foul Life Midwest podcast. And Chad Belding and his crew, Bubba Henderson, Tom Rasheen, Luke and David and Andrew, they're here. We are shooting episodes for the national television show, The Foul Life, which has cooking in it.
Your
it
favorite.
Has hunting in it.
Your favorite.
It has social features in it about the great state of Wisconsin. How excited am I? Mean, I literally wish we could have 17 shows with these people in studio.
Oh, I feel like there is so much
There's
to talk
so
about.
There's so much to talk about. You can't
and we're already
possibly
halfway over.
Get to all of it. And, you know, right before the break, Chad Belding was talking about, I mean, he's here in studio. He was talking about the networking you can do in Wisconsin. Because when you meet somebody in this state, you're not just friends with them for that trip.
Mm-hmm.
You have a propensity to be friends with them forever, to keep coming back, to make it part of what you do, who you are, and part of your future endeavors. I think that happens with everybody who comes here. Mm-hmm. And the reason I say that, I know that, is because Anna V Outdoors, Anna Van Nostrand has been part of my life now for 2 years.
Oh.
She literally met the Foul Life guys the first time they came here shooting episodes for the show a couple years ago. And now we can't shake her. I mean
well, she seems pretty freaking
cool.
She
can't get rid of us.
We go back like 30 minutes.
Yeah,
she's pretty great.
She's fantastic to have along. Anna V, man, welcome back to Wisconsin, to Waukesha. But you have a history in this state.
Do you?
I love this place.
Aww.
I know.
That makes me so happy.
And the the great thing about it is, so Anna V now works with us at The Foul Life, but she's also got Anna V Outdoors. And you came to us from definitely a different aspect of hunting than the waterfowl aspect.
Yeah.
From
we did a little bit, but it wasn't the main focus.
Yeah. So you came to Wisconsin as an upland hunter and a dog trainer, literally a dog trainer. You lived in this state. Did you ever think that would lead to the relationship we have now together with The Foul Life and you being part of Anna V Outdoors and The Foul Life?
Well, Chad and I got connected through the industry like a year and a half before we met at your house. So we had been friends, but we just hadn't been like in the same place at the same time. So it was just by chance that I had traveled. I was headed back south and camp was like 15 minutes off my route. So I was like, okay, let me go see what this like real waterfowl life is about.
And I love the quotes. When you do say she did camp, hand quotes.
When you that's say what, camp, you mean my house, right? My house was camp.
He was telling me, because we had podcast on the Foul Life podcast a couple of times, and he was like, you need a real waterfowl hunt. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure that's what we do, but... So that was the funny part of it, is that I showed up for a real waterfowl hunt.
Aww.
And now she can't get enough of us and she's back. So
Anna, I mean, waterfowl takes everybody.
And I know, and this was so great. Today we went to Milford Hills, and I'm going to tell you what, you are in your element in a pheasant field, no doubt about
really?
It. Oh, for sure. You were ear to ear the whole time we were there. And I think for you, it was, I mean, you said it's about the dogs.
I know. And Tom kept telling me, do you smile when you walk through the field? Because he was behind the camera. I'm like, absolutely.
Why wouldn't you? Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, I think I probably should have had a permanent residence, like as many days out of the year that I spent in Wisconsin for like 3 years. I was probably should have changed my license. I loved it here.
Oh, yeah. I don't think people mistake you for a local, though, do they?
Because no,
with that accent,
God,
I was like,
no.
I like it. I feel like our voice is a little bit different.
The funniest thing at the kennel.
I love coming to Wisconsin.
Was all the clients would come in for the weekend because there was a preserve at the club. And so there was people there all the time with their dogs. So they would just take at dinner and write town names on napkins.
Oh, yes. I love when people do that.
So that I can pronounce everything. We sat down and I was looking up the hunt club that I fell in love with up here, and it got me back into tournament hunting, which was a big deal here in Wisconsin.
What was
the
club?
Gun Dog Bill, all the gun dog guys and stuff. It's North Oak.
What's Jenna something?
Sheboygan?
Shetek?
I'm not going to lie. I just bleeped you guys because I thought you said something really different. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Say that again.
You probably didn't even hear Shinnatonkin. I didn't mean to scare the Shinnatonkin out of you.
I almost did it again.
Okay.
We've gotten fairly good at avoiding the seven words, Anastasia.
Which I still do not know what they all are.
I can't tell you right now. That's
Luke Williams knows him, and we're going to talk to him in a minute. But
how do you say that?
I don't know. Let me see. Shiocton.
Oh, Shiocton.
Shiocton.
Shiocton. There we go.
Okay, so if you run dogs, you have to go up there because they do 1 weekend a month. They do tournament hunting with their dogs and... They have a restaurant there and a bar, and the owners are so sweet. I mean, you were family if you show up one time. And I loved that place. I spent so much time there.
Where's your accent from, though?
Georgia.
Georgia. Right. So you hear so often about Southern hospitality and Southern kindness. I think we're that kind up here.
We're north.
It's exactly the same. And the communities, like the further, I mean, I know you're in the South, but I spent more time up north in the farming towns, and there's huge dairies there. Because I was in right north of Wausau.
Yeah.
And so the communities up there are so strong. And, you know, in the summer, all the churches would have like ice cream socials, but they all planned together because every church like migrated to each ice cream social and stuff. I mean, it was like stepping back in time, and I'd call my dad and I'm like, we just drove the Sabbath salad. We trained all day. We're going down to the bar. We're in the Sabbath side. And you feel like you're like stepping back to Smokey and the Bandit days. So I was like, I don't know any other way to describe
See,
it.
See, we have those ice cream socials. We have the bake sales. But then you had the church festivals.
Oh, yeah.
And those
oh,
are the yes. best festivals.
Yeah.
that I ever gone.
And
go to.
She's right about that, though. I mean, you'll have a pastor. You go to the local bar, you'll be sitting next to the pastor or the priest from the church.
Oh, yeah. Been there, done that.
Had the fish fry.
I looked over one day. I'm like, pastor guy? He's like, yeah. Want a beer? I'm like, okay. Why not?
It somehow makes it feel like it's more all right if you're sitting next to your pastor while you're having a drink.
Yeah, he's just giving me permission.
Right? That's right. He's like, you are not going to go to hell if you have this cocktail. Now, shots, that's a different story.
Well, yeah.
And if one of the things that makes me so happy to know you, and something we talk about on the show quite a bit, is the fastest growing group of new hunters, which is women.
Yeah.
That is something that you have not only worked on. I think you're a role model in that area. I think that you have a fantastic attitude about it. What are the keys to continuing to perpetuate women getting into the hunting industry and staying in it?
Oh, that's like the $1 million question, right?
And well, you know, it is. Like, but really, if you look at the brands, if you look at, you know, people who are making money on hunting, and frankly, hunting as a need, as a necessity to control populations, we have to look at women because they're growing and the rest of the hunting population is declining.
Yeah. And what people don't know is that, yeah, I was raised in a hunting family, but we were whitetail turkey hunters. I didn't start bird hunting until this is my 7th season. So, but I was fortunate enough to get to travel, you know, like, I would say my first year, I probably did 40,000 miles in a year with the bird dogs. And I continued to do that. So you can make up a lot of time with miles because the average person, you know, can't spend that much time. So I feel like I've gained a lifetime's worth of knowledge almost within a short amount of time because of the hours that I got to spend doing it. And I love sharing that because I don't want people to pull up social media or just hear this show. And then the way you describe me, it seems like I've been doing this for forever. I haven't.
Hey, I've been hunting since I was 38 years old.
And I started when I was 25.
I'm only 39 now, but
I was going to say 38, but sure.
Thank you, Danielle.
You're welcome.
I'll take it.
See, I'm
take it where you can get it. But
it's the perception I think of that it's so hard to learn and it, am I going to be accepted if I don't know things or whatever? I just never said no. I never claimed to know anything, so I couldn't make a mistake. And just sharing the message that there's the hunting community is the most welcoming community. There's no better people in the world than gun dog people.
And or waterfowl.
The dogs
people,
always
or turkey
help.
People, or yeah. Whitetail people.
Gun dog people are the best. So it's just like, you got to get started and you find your niche. I would never have thought that the dogs would have been what sold me because I was straight up cowgirl. I never thought I would not own a horse. And as soon as I got my bird dog, I was like phasing out.
Sure.
You know, and I was at horse shows with a short hair pointing pigeons in the barn. And like my life got turned upside down. And sometimes it happens and you don't see it coming. Mm-hmm. But creating the just the hunting communities to welcome, host events, have follow-up. It's all about friendships, relationships, and community.
I think you nailed that on the head.
Those girl groups are definitely getting more popular over the years. Because when I first started, maybe I didn't look for them as much as I do now. But it was just you and then all dudes. And like maybe two other girls. But now I just I didn't tell you. I booked one of my bucket list ducks. I'm going on Black Friday for Old Squaw.
Oh,
long
that'll
tail.
Be fantastic.
I know, I'm so excited.
Yeah, they're beautiful. They are beautiful. And that's
but that's
thing.
An all-girl hunt.
And you can hunt
so,
those in Wisconsin,
excited.
Right on Lake Michigan. Mm-hmm. You can hunt long tails, and you can hunt puddle ducks, and you can hunt just about everything. Canada geese, we get specks here, we get snow geese. And so here you are now, after, you know, the 7 years you've been involved.
We have not talked about grouse woods at all, and I'm just got to put it out there.
I've never hunted grouse.
Oh, my Lord.
Oh, my Lord.
One of the greatest places in the world.
Never hunted grouse. I mean, pheasant, done that, but grouse, nope.
That's a challenging
hunt. I do not know anybody that actually does that.
What do you do now?
Oh, what's up, girl?
Just so you know, Danielle will be planning a grouse hunt with you.
Oh, yes.
By the time
yes.
we leave
well,
here
I can introduce you to people that are here just in case I don't
I mean,
make it
I
back.
Really like making friends, so I'm totally... Can I bring Bandit?
Yes.
Okay, I'm done. Let's do it.
And you're sitting there now, Annevie, and you've got a camera, you know, you know, 3 feet, literally 3 feet from your face, because you're obviously good at the media stuff. You have a presence. You're somebody that I think women and men look up to in the hunting industry now. And it's fascinating when the Fall Life crew comes in, because I do really love every part of it, including the camera folks who come in. Luke Williams is sitting in a chair a few, you know, steps away from you. And Luke, I want to talk with you real quick about the fact that when you do hunting and you put a camera somewhere, it really changes the dynamic of the hunt.
Absolutely. It changes everything about a hunt. I mean, that's one of the things that people don't think about. When we go out to film, everything about that hunt goes almost upside down, because we've got guys that are out filming, you know, we're outside of the blind, we're inside of the blind, we're in ghillie suits, we've got, you know, turkey blind set up somewhere. And so whenever you start adding those different aspects, it changes everything, especially when you're not running migrator birds, especially when you're running local birds. You start getting in fields where they notice differences. It becomes a big deal to have a film crew there. And also, like, we're looking for the perfect shot. When people go out and hunt without cameras, it's a little bit more flexible. You might take some longer shots. You may take some shots that are, you know,
overhead passing shots.
I didn't want to say it, but yeah, exactly. Like, you know, you can have fun.
Sky busting shots. Right,
exactly. Yeah. Sky busting shots.
I just want to shoot something.
Right, yeah, you just get bored and you start shooting, right? And so when you're out there with a camera, it's different. Look, when I take kids out for the first time, and if we have a bad day of duck hunting, I always let them shoot a decoy at the end of the hunt. I'm like, we're going to shoot something.
No.
Absolutely. Wax a decoy. Let's shoot something today and just have a ton of fun.
But it's different when you're filming. If my decoy is rattling, it means we got them close enough.
That's right.
I'm never mad about it.
That's right.
I'm never mad if there's a rattling decoy.
That's right. But it is fun. It's fun to do it from this point of view.
Well,
I feel like you can't have this tree you got going on here.
I can't.
This cam's pretty sweet. I want to bring you back when we come back. We're going to wrap it up with you, but I want to talk to you when we come back about the difference in expectations from folks who are hunting here and they think it's going to be a piece of cake.
Right.
And trying to explain to somebody who doesn't have cameras around what's going to change when they do and how that's going to change the dynamic of the hunt and the expectations for the hunt. We'll be right back. We're going to drag Chad Belding back into the studio too. And we'll be right back on Raised in Wisco.
Just good old boys.
Never meaning no harm.
Who sings this song?
I do.
Oh, boy.
Good try. Good try.
I tried. Welcome back to Raised in Wisco. I'm your host, Joel Clayfish, alongside Danielle Fairman. Hey, if you're out there, make sure to listen to us on your civic media station throughout the state of Wisconsin. 13 stations we're on, Danielle, now, and continue growing. So
we
no
are.
Matter where you are in Wisconsin or even over the borders of those
yes.
Illinois and Minnesota, you can listen to us, too, on the bigger cities that border Wisconsin, Minnesota, Michigan. What a phenomenal, fun show.
This is a great show. I wish it could continue on.
I wish we could continue it. I think we should maybe try to convince these folks to stay for an extra week.
Well, tomorrow's Fish Fry Friday.
Tomorrow is
just
Fish
saying.
Fry Friday.
Old fashions, fish fry, what could go wrong?
The Fowl Life, if you're just joining us, the Fowl Life crew is in town, and we are hunting waterfowl in Wisconsin. We're hunting upland birds here, and we're so jacked to have them. We went into the break talking to Luke Williams, who is one of the photogs along on this trip, and we were talking about some of the difficulties of having cameras in the field and some of the nuances that I don't think people expect. And one of the things that I think people sincerely don't expect is they want to make the Fowl Life happy when you go on a hunt. Everybody
right.
wants to make the Fowl
Absolutely.
Life happy. I mean, you've got
right.
one of the largest waterfowl shows in the world here. You want a successful hunt, and you're
That's
able
right.
to kill a pile. Maybe you got to shoot them high. Maybe you're taking some shots overhead. TV, doing TV is very different.
Changes the game completely. I mean, you're exactly right. When people come in, especially when somebody like Chad comes in, who has been so big in the industry and knows what he's doing, and comes in, they want to set him up right. And so, you know, when we're coming in, it's figuring out how to, number one, not mess up their game plan. Because that's the biggest thing, is they're coming in with expectations, and we have to meet to that a little bit. And so that means that we have to be on top of our game for hiding, for dumping back in the brush when we need to, for keeping our heads low on moments when we need to. You know, there's a lot that happens. But also, we have to film the bird. So it's finding that happy medium of, oh, man, I've got to move, because I've got to show the birds coming in flight as they come and make that final approach, that final flight, right? And so, you know, it's trying to find that medium ground, and it's tough. It's tough. TV makes everything, in my opinion, and Chad can probably speak to it more because he's been doing this for 16 years, but it makes it 10 times harder, I would say.
Yeah, Chad, is it a lot harder when you got cameras in the field? And do you ever miss not having cameras in the field and just being out there with a couple buddies in layout blinds versus, you know, trying to pack 9 people into a field?
Yeah, I do. But people always ask me, like, do you ever get the fun hunt? And it's fun for me to do this because I like to create that visual experience for every viewer to where I have a different mindset. Like, I don't think you should pass shoot animals. If you want to do that, you go to sporting clays. I don't care how proficient you think you are at the gun. I think a 70-yard shot on waterfowl is weird. I don't think that's hunting. And if you want to see a bird fall out of the air that bad, it's kind of a weird mindset. Unless you're hungry and you're hunting for the table, and that's completely different. Still have to have proficiency in that shot because you're taking the responsibility of aiming a gun and squeezing the trigger and killing a live animal. And I think that ethically you have to do it the right way. So with cameras, you know, it's taught me that you can be patient and you can get those animals to hunt you up. You know, one of my biggest things in life was coyote hunting. We got really proficient with coyote hunting to where we would, you know, we would go to places like Mexico or Alberta or Saskatchewan, Canada, hunt with locals in that area to where there's an abundance of coyotes. And I'm from the West United States where they're everywhere, right? So predator management has always been key to me, but we got to the point to where we barely use rifles because we want them to hunt you up and shoot them with shotguns at 10 feet, right? So I've always had this mindset of intimacy and a negotiation with animals and TV and that aspect of getting them close for that visual stimulation. Like my stimulus is through the roof when I see the majesty of ducks and geese. Today I was visualizing those pheasants as watching from afar through the binoculars of a company that's based here in Wisconsin, Vortex. You know, we have a great relationship with them, and I got to see rooster pheasant fly up and flush. And it's just like those old paintings that you would see in probably an old Wisconsin pub or bar. Right. So my visual stimuli was always the negotiation and the intimacy of it. I think that it's the most intimate thing in hunting is when you can get a bull elk at 9 yards or a coyote at 8 feet or a duck and goose at right over your decoy spread, right? So the cameras have given me this mindset, like, that's not good enough. I'm not calling that shot. And a lot of people don't like hunting with me because of that. They want to kill. They want that pile. They want that whole feeling of everything is about the kill. And I get so caught up in what ducks and geese can do. And once I saw them do it the right way one time, I wanted it every time. Yep. And if I don't get it, I don't settle because I'm not that keyed up on just the kill. And I think this as a hunter, killing is great. I'm unapologetic about it, but there's something about TV and getting it done right and getting that shot. Like when Luke or David will text me a little screenshot of their camera of what they just got, that's telling me that their stimuli is going off because they're like, wow, that's beautiful. And then I was out here on this laptop with Tom before the show started, and he was showing me pictures of the molt migration and the pictures of the geese that he got being geese. And it's unbelievable of what you can do if you're patient and let animals hunt you up. So what it's taught me is to be patient and let those animals get in tight. And it's a ton of work. It's so much work. And when you're behind the scenes and you come do it, a lot of people are done after one go. I'm surprised that you still want to do it, but you've done TV for a long time, but it's a lot of work.
But I love it. That's exactly what I'm talking about. I tell people the most satisfying thing is literally fooling Mother Nature because it's so hard to fool Mother Nature and to get a wild animal that close to you without knowing you're there or with that animal believing they're setting into a feeding spread of real compatriots in the field. I took my brother, my daughter's fiance hunting for the first time in his life last week.
Turkey hunting.
We went turkey hunting and I had those decoys literally set 10 yards outside of where we were sitting. And he shot, the first time he pulled a trigger on a wild animal, he killed a giant 20-pound tom turkey with a 10-inch beard.
Awesome.
Right in front of him. And I posted a picture of that and said, we killed this animal you know, 10 yards in front of us. I took a ton of criticism. There were people who criticized me. So close, you could have wrung its neck. So close, why didn't you just grab it?
Isn't that a good thing
They're
that you did that?
They're missing the point. You're going to get an ethical shot at that distance. And that's when you get to understand what that animal is truly doing and you're really fooling Mother Nature. And that and so, yes, Chad, we do try to kill them in the pocket because that is the ultimate, you know, goal of fooling Mother Nature and the beauty of getting them close to do that. Anna V, I'm so jacked that you're here. We're having a great time. The pheasant field today was amazing. It's great to see you. Looking forward to a great week.
Thank you, Joel.
Looking forward to grouse hunting.
Oh, yeah. It's season.
It is. Chad, we're going to have a great time this week?
Mm-hmm.
All right. We're doing already. Jack Klobuchar is here in the studio. He's hosting.
Hello.